Here and There with Dave Marish is funded in part by the Reva and David Logan Foundation, keeping watch for the strategies that help create a more informed and just future for all.
Welcome to Here and There. We search near and far to bring you accurate, timely information about important news stories here in New Mexico and the American Southwest, and there, everywhere else. I'm Dave Marish. This June, during primary elections in Doña Ana County in southern New Mexico, 21% of the eligible voters turned out to cast their ballots. Not so good, you say? Well, 4 years before, in 2014, when the same set of elections were on the ballot, just 13% of eligible voters took part. One key factor in that dramatic improvement is County Clerk Scott Kraling, who says of his accomplishment, quote, "We have a lot of work to do." Kraling is part of a movement of reformist public servants who are casting off the old assumption that their job is just to administer the vote. That limited approach, they say, fit the days before the Supreme Court's Citizens United decision liberated dark money and gave a small group of activist billionaires an outsized influence on American politics, national, state, and often local. Funders like Charles and David Koch and Robert and Rebecca Mercer spent hundreds of millions of dollars to turn out only like-minded voters and often worked to discourage or exclude voters whom they didn't like. That's why Kraling says it's important that officials like him do everything they can to convince all citizens to vote. When it comes to selling this idea, Kraling is concentrating on young voters, students in local colleges, universities, and even high schools. And he's doing this for the exact same reason that commercial sales managers pitch their products to the young. It's not because they're easier marks, but because once they make a buyer's choice, they're likely to stick with it for a lifetime, which is exactly what Scott Kraling has in mind, getting young people to vote every November as a habit. Our guest today, Heath Hausemann, the editor and publisher of the excellent online news site nmpolitics.net, has been reporting this story. Heath, welcome back to Here and There.
I'm happy to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
Scott Kraling has been part of Doña Ana County government since 2009, and for much of that time his focus has been on getting citizens to vote, but that became especially true once he became the head of the county's Bureau of Elections in 2013. Can you sort of sketch out for us the outlines of the evolution of Kraling's Get Out the Vote campaign?
Yeah, and let me say, here's a little tidbit that didn't make it into the story even. Before Kraling was working in the Bureau of Elections, he was a county commissioner in Doña Ana County, and he actually voted to redistrict himself out of his district in 2008 or 9, and that's how he got out of that office. He had pushed for the county commission to set up an independent, nonpartisan redistricting commission, and when they came back and said, we would move the boundary so that you're no longer in your district, which would put him out of office. He thought about it and said, you know, I said I would trust this process, and if this nonpartisan group says this is the best thing to do, certainly there were other county commissioners saying, hey, we can work this out, we'll move these lines. And he said, nope, we said we would trust this process, let's do it. And he voted himself out of office, essentially. So he's kind of a wonky, good government guy at his core, and I think he's demonstrated that time and again. And when he started working in the Bureau of Elections, the county clerk's office down here had been in years and years of scandal. We had a counting error in the 2000 election that flipped the election from Bush to Gore back and forth. It was Doña Ana County that messed up New Mexico's elections, and the county had spent years fixing things. And by the time Kraling got into the office, what he tells me is there was more room to start thinking about revisioning what the office should be doing, that things were stable, elections were finally running smoothly here, and county clerks in other counties have really told me that the Doña Ana clerk's office has become a model for the state. And so then he started thinking bigger about how can we get people out to vote, how can we counter dark money, how can we be the trusted place that encourages and works with other groups to encourage all voters to vote, regardless of their ideology, their voter registration, that we could be a trusted nonpartisan source, whereas all these other sources are dark money and sometimes hard to figure out what their motives are if you're a voter.
And again, I think we ought to say that although Kraling is a Democrat and is mm-hmm. probably on the liberal side of the ledger, his objection to the dark money isn't so much that money is being invested ideologically in politics as that it's being used selectively to encourage mm-hmm. a few people to vote, but also being used in ways that either discourage or exclude people from voting. And that is anathema to Scott Kraling.
Yes, and I'll tell you, one of the political realities in the Las Cruces area is that progressives successfully organized back in 2007 or so. They took over the Las Cruces City Council, and they have, I was going to say had a stranglehold, but that sounds like a negative term. They've just out-organized any other group, and they have controlled city, county, state government from Doniana County for more than a decade. And some of the resistance, early resistance to some of these get out the vote efforts that Scott Kraling was working on actually came from some, not all, but some progressives and some leaders of that movement saying, hey, we already know how to control the vote here. Why would we want that to change? So in some ways, there have been aspects of this where he's standing up to some influential people within the Democratic Party or the progressive movement locally, while also looking at the national trend, and certainly suppressing the vote on a national level seems to come more often from Republicans than Democrats. So I think it was easy here for folks to look at it and say, yeah, progressives sometimes aren't the ones that like more people voting here. So it looks like more of a nonpartisan issue here because of the political reality here. And he set up a nonpartisan election advisory task force, which has led some of these get out the vote efforts. And it's chaired by a Republican, Dolores Connor, who was a longtime city councilor here, actually ran for county clerk against Kraling and lost, and now she chairs the task force. So it is a bipartisan effort here.
I got to say that Scott Kraling is about the most ecumenical politician I've ever heard of. I mean, as you say, he joined the conspiracy to redistrict himself out of office, and he brought in his opponent in the county clerk race to be the chair of his sort of get out the vote election committee. This is a guy with a laser focus, which yeah. is democracy demands voters, so let's mm-hmm. turn them out. He has lots of methods, from personal outreach to online and through the mail efforts. Can you give mm-hmm. us some of the things that the county clerk's office in Doña Ana County has already done to tickle voters, to get them interested so that they will turn out and cast ballots?
Yeah, and some of it is pretty simple stuff. This election, this general election coming up in November, for the first time, the county clerk's office will put up its own website in partnership with the League of Women Voters, that will have basic information about candidates. It'll look kind of like a League of Women Voters guide, only an online version, where potentially candidates will each be asked to answer a question. They'll answer the question. There will be a link to their website for more info. And the clerk's office is going to mail postcards to every eligible voter in the election, say, here's where you can go to find good information. So that's one thing. Last fall, they held a meeting, a public forum in Las Cruces, inviting people to just show up and share why they vote or why they don't vote. And it was the people who showed up to talk about why they don't vote that I think there was a revelation there for Kraling and some others. And this resonated with me when Kraling told me about this, that often what he hears from people who do vote about people who don't vote is that they don't vote because they're lazy. And that's a pretty common thing I hear as a political journalist about non-voters. What Kraling heard at this meeting from folks who don't vote is they want to be involved, but it's hard to find the time to get the information they need to feel like they're making good choices. The system is confusing, both in the way it's structured and in Doniana County before the consolidating of local elections that's underway this year. We were having 10, 13 elections in a year. And people found that confusing. People told them they found it confusing to figure out what's a trusted source of information about these candidates, which is partly a dark money issue, and it's partly a issue with the news media having less capacity to cover these local races. And so he talked about that being a real mental shift for him from, we have to motivate people to vote because they're lazy, to we have to give people the tools that they're asking for so that they can feel like they're making good choices, and then they'll do it.
Well, you know, there's a world of difference between lazy, which is a moral condemnation, and unmotivated.
Right.
Because lazy people are lazy people. You can't make them do anything. But unmotivated
sure.
people just need motivation. And in his outreach, he found that one of the reasons people were unmotivated was that they didn't know. They didn't know who was
right.
running for what when, and just letting them know, he says, can motivate them to vote.
Right. I'll tell you, living in this county and being a political journalist who, you know, sometimes my friends will call me on election day and say, who are you voting for this? And I usually don't tell them because I want it to be their vote. Don't give me that power. But even as somebody who's that plugged into the system, occasionally an election has come up on me in this county. You know, some water and sanitation district or conservation district or something that I didn't know was coming up. And people miss these elections all the time. And so Kraling was one of the people pushing for the state legislature to approve consolidating all of those local elections around the state into one election that will be held every other November. And the intention is that voters know they have one big election every November. One year it's for partisan races like president and Congress and state races like governor and county races like sheriff. And the next year will be what they call nonpartisan races where people don't run as Democrats or Republicans like city council, school board, water and conservation district, things like that, to simplify it so that people know every November there's an election. If school boards and county commission, I'm sorry, city councils and others are all running at the same time, the idea is it'll bring more attention to the election. There'll be more on the ballot. People will be more likely to hear about it and pay attention to it. So that's one thing he pushed for. There's some other structural reforms he's pushing for. But the other big thing, and I think the biggest focus to date of Kraling and this election task force he set up, is going into schools, every high school in the county, and registering people who are eligible to vote. And I went with Kraling in April for a day down to Chaparral High School. Chaparral is in southern Doniana County. It's actually a suburb on the north side of El Paso, Texas. And it's a community that's in two counties. It's half in Doniana County and half in Otero County. And I watched him talk to students in classes about the importance of voting. And you know, teachers that were telling me he's the first elected official to ever come talk to kids in a rural poor school district like that, and then register them to vote. And he had some of these nonpartisan voter registration agents from the county clerk's office, and then also volunteer groups with him. They went around the cafeteria at lunch and asked every kid in the cafeteria if they wanted to register to vote. Answered questions there, and students I talked to really like this. Here's somebody who works in government who's here to talk to me about why I should care. And they registered 50 people that day. And they registered about 700 students throughout the county. They were in every high school but one. One of the high schools said no, but all the others, and there are three different school districts here, they went in every school and they registered 700 kids.
It isn't like all of them were easy sells.
No.
give us a sense of the sales pitch to the resistant. How does Scott and his many voluntary associates try and hook that fish and say, you know, well, I notice your eyes didn't light right up, but maybe I can get you interested. How do they pursue that?
It was interesting, and I was aware that in Chaparral, one of the dynamics is Scott Kraling is, you know, a white man, and he's speaking to students who are primarily people of color, primarily Latinos. He had a little quiz that he had them take, you know, things like, was the right to vote always protected in the U.S. Constitution? And they would talk about, you know, no, not for everybody. At first, it was just white male landowners, and Kraling said, like me. And frankly, when it was just people like me who made all the decisions, we didn't make very good ones. So I'm glad that we've expanded the right to vote to women and people of color and non-landowners. And we can do better, but you guys have to participate. You guys have to join people like me in making these decisions in the government. He made a real personal plea for, as a white man, I'm here saying we need more people who look like you and less who look like me making these decisions. So you guys need to participate.
I thought one of the interesting things from your chats with the students is how in many ways they reflect the overall electorate of Doña Ana County. I think that Chaparral's Latino percentage was right around 2/3, but so is the county's.
Right.
And a lot of people would think, well, Latinos and particularly Latinos of not high income are going to be natural Democrats. But you found that that was not universally true. There was one kid who sort of ticked off every box that would predict that he was going to vote Democratic. But he's not. He says he can't wait to vote Republican.
Yeah, and that was the first, he was 17, I believe, John Gomez. He was the first student I happened to talk to, and he said, nope, I'm registering Republican. Okay, cool. And I talked to him about why. I talked to two other students in the cafeteria who didn't want to tell me what party they were registering with, but they told me they were registering. One told me independent eventually. The other didn't tell me at all. You know, but one of those students was interested in the high cost of college and gun violence in schools, you know, the issues that seem to maybe more typically lean a little more to the left. You know, but I definitely talked to some students who were excited to register and vote and some who were skeptical but doing it anyway. I watched the voter registration agents be told by some students, no, we're not interested in registering to vote. So it was a very hard sell for some students. It was a real mix.
And at the end of the day, they had registered 50 voters?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and the youth campaign cool across the county is registered 700.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All the way from Hatch Valley High School in the north part of the county to Gadsden High School in Anthony and Chaparral High School in the southern part of the county, and all the high schools in Las Cruces. So they really made the rounds, and it's a big time commitment when Kraling goes out and does this. It was him and one other staffer from the county clerk's office and a couple of volunteers, and they spent the whole day at the school speaking to government classes at every period throughout the day and then spending their lunch talking to students in the cafeteria.
You know, I think one of the hallmarks of Kraling's strategy is that his Get Out the Vote youth campaign is not a bunch of adults going out to a high school and saying, nice kitty, come over here to the registration table and sign your name. No, in addition to having an election advisory board for the county, he also created a youth version of the electoral board, so that it's not just adults talking down to kids, but he is recruiting young people to talk straight across the table to other young people and get them to vote.
Right, and it's college students, and it's not only focused at New Mexico State University. We also have students who are residents of particularly the southern part of Doña Ana County who go to college at UTEP in El Paso because it's closer to them. Students at Doña Ana Community College, which is the branch campuses of NMSU. So they've got students from all those who come together and meet at NMSU, I believe monthly, and talk about that too. And one of the things those students asked for was Corbett Center, the student union building at NMSU, has always been a polling place on election day, at least as long as I've been here. But they said they asked for the first time with the county clerk's office make it an early voting site too, so that students and anybody else who wants to go to campus, but students in particular have even more opportunity and have that in their face more, and it increases awareness that there's an election and they need to vote.
You know,
so Kraling said, yeah, we'll do that. So for the first time, it will be an early voting place.
Anybody who's done political canvassing would recognize that Chaparral High really is a test zone. It's a difficult, mm-hmm. high degree of difficulty. The mm-hmm. high school straddles two counties, so mm-hmm. on local elections, that two separate slates. And as a suburb of El Paso, it is in a media market that is officially designated as El Paso / Las Cruces, mm-hmm. but El Paso is the senior partner there. And so aside from one of the public television stations, which I think is based in Las Cruces, the emphasis of media political coverage is much more on West Texas than Eastern New Mexico. So all of those disadvantages were staring Kraling and his volunteers right in the face when they went to Chaparral High.
Right, and I'll tell you, people in Chaparral tend to have El Paso cell phone numbers, not New Mexico cell phone numbers. On the weekends, they're in El Paso shopping. They don't come up to Las Cruces. Their medical care tends to be in El Paso, unless they're on some kind of health plan that requires them to be in New Mexico. But it's like a drive from Rio Rancho to Albuquerque, as opposed to Rio Rancho going all the way up to Santa Fe to do things instead. It just doesn't make sense. And you're right, the newspapers don't really cover news in Chaparral unless there's some horrific crime or something. I was the first journalist they've seen at this high school in I don't know how long, but there were people definitely expressed gratitude that I showed up for something that was good news instead of bad, and also just said, we don't ever see people like you here. And in that kind of climate, and one of the things Kraling does when he's talking to students is try to get them interested not just in national politics, which seems to be an easier sell for young people right now, but also local. And he told them in the county in 2016, 62% of eligible voters voted in the presidential race. But this spring, in a school board election for their school district, only 3% of voters cast ballots. And he asked them to pay attention to that, too. I talked to the teacher in one of these classes after, and he said, it's a hard sell when, these kids, a lot of their life is in El Paso. They live here. And I asked students when I was asking them about registering to vote, do you live in Doniana or Otero counties? And some of them weren't even sure which county they lived in. So which county commission should you care about? Which state legislator should you care about? They don't know. So it's a lot. And it had me thinking again about when Kraling heard from non-voters that they find the system confusing. This is one of the aspects that we run into is, for a community like Chaparral, it's not an incorporated town, so county commissions are their government, but half the town has one county commission, one sheriff, one county clerk, and the other has different ones. And is there a way we can structure things or restructure things that makes this easier for people to understand and engage in their government? I don't know, but it's those are the kinds of questions that Kraling and this elections task force are tackling, and they're trying to take nothing off the table. Let's just talk about big ideas that revision what government should look like, what elections should look like, so that they are designed to encourage participation instead of discourage it.
I think the epitome of that, and I am fuzzy on the details, I confess, but it was in southeastern New Mexico within the last couple of years that there was a local school board election. And I don't think anybody showed up to vote, or if they did, it was literally two or three or four mm-hmm. votes, mm-hmm. and it was so few that everybody felt it was an invalid election. But if you think about how do people, and again, just as in Doña Ana County, where the local school board election was in the spring, mm-hmm. also this school board election was at some, for most voters, cockamamie time, not November. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So focusing everything on the second Tuesday or the first Tuesday in November as mm-hmm. election day makes it easier. But, of course, most people learn about politics through the media, and the media, whether they're based in Las Cruces or El Paso, are going to spend more time on the presidential or the senatorial or the gubernatorial or the congressional. And by the time you get down to the level of local school boards and county mm-hmm. clerk's offices, the column inches are few and hard to find. And this is one of the handicaps that Scott Kraling must overcome. It turns out mm-hmm. he has one very interesting advantage, which we'll talk about when we get back. But first, we're going to take a brief pause. This is Here and There. I'm Dave Marish. Our guest is Heath Hauserman, the editor and publisher of nmpolitics.net. If you are interested in politics in the state of New Mexico, and particularly the southern parts of the state of New Mexico, this is must-see reading. We'll be back right after these messages. Welcome back to Here and There. I'm Dave Marish. Our guest is Heath Hauserman of nmpolitics.net. As long as I'm throwing bouquets around, as I keep saying, my favorite part of the show is my homework, where I get to read in so that I can ask intelligent questions of our guests. Going over to nmpolitics.net, I noticed that not only is there a lot of enterprise reporting and in-depth and investigative reporting, and those are all categories that most New Mexicans associate Heath Hauserman's name with, because he's been doing it here for a decade or more. But there was also a whole stack of political stories that would be of particular interest to readers in New Mexico and southern New Mexico. So congratulations on running a really fabulous news aggregation service, as well as local news reporting. It's great, great to see that.
Thanks. I work really hard at it, and it's good to know that it's helping some people get the information they need. That's what we were talking about before the break, that it's hard for some people to get any news coverage whatsoever in their communities, and it's just really important. That's one of the reasons I went to Chaparral for this story. When I looked at the times that were available to go with the county clerk and see what he does when he goes into a school and register voters, I had choices of two high schools in Las Cruces or one in Chaparral. And I'm trying to do a better job of getting into rural New Mexico, where the news desert tends to be greater, and talk to people there instead of always just being in the city.
Amen, brother. This is you know, you got to get sand in those shoe leather soles that you're out pounding. One thing that Scott Kraling discovered at Chaparral High was not news to him. He's known about it and is probably in many ways happy about it. But the government teacher, Carl Bailey, who pretty much hosted this, said to Kraling, you know, the interest among students in politics and in voting and in elections has really taken off after Donald Trump was elected president in 2016. This is, as I say, not news to Scott, because he saw a great rise in interest in the primary voting in Doña Ana County in June. But this was a trend that stretched across the state and seems to be stretching across the nation, more and more people, for whatever reason, after the election of Donald Trump, want to get more actively involved in voting and in politics. This may, in fact, be especially true of people in the 18 to 24-year cohort.
Yes. I saw some numbers recently from Bernalillo County, and I'm not going to remember the exact timeline or the exact numbers, but the trend of recent voter registration in Bernalillo County is that the two youngest categories, 18 to 24 and 25 to 35, or whatever those two youngest categories are, people in those age groups are registering to vote in Bernalillo County at a much faster rate than older people, and more of them are registering as Democrats. So I mean, those seem to be trends across the country. Voter turnout being up ever since Trump was elected, in almost every election I've looked at, every election, local election in New Mexico since then, and national elections in general, turnout is up. I referenced in my article about Scott Kraling's efforts a New York Times article on how reinstating the teaching of civics in grade school is a new trend that's on the rise since Trump was elected. And there are efforts to do that, and that's part of Kraling's focus is not just on registering the 17 and 18 year olds who are in school now, but partnering with the schools to build a longer-term culture in the schools of teaching civics to kids, of getting kids familiar with voting while they're in grade school, and making them lifelong voters.
I thought one of Kraling's most interesting and really easiest to achieve ideas was to use voting machines not mm-hmm. just for government elections, but for student government elections, mm-hmm. so that kids internalize the whole process of how do you vote, how do you use that voting machine. And of course, right. I'm sure in New Mexico and across the country, a lot of schools are voting precincts, so it's not mm-hmm. like they've got to transport the voting machines long distance or take them places that they never go. The idea of taking the voting machines out of mothballs so that students can use them mm-hmm. for their own elections, I think is really inspired. And again, what he's trying to inculcate here is a voting habit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he calls it a voting culture, but habit works just as well for me. And I thought it was a pretty cool idea, not just to teach students about the importance of voting and how to vote, but to have them using the actual machines that they'll be using when they turn 18 and vote in, I was going to say real elections, but in government elections as opposed to student elections, and just totally demystify not just what voting is like, but what the machine is going to be like when you go in and how you fill out the actual ballot and the whole thing. I think it's pretty cool. I would have liked that when I was in high school.
Me too.
Or college. Can they do that at NMSU? And can the Bernalillo County clerk do that at UNM? And so on. I think that would be pretty cool for their student government elections.
Now, if in fact these trends do play out and more mm-hmm. and more young people are going to vote in 2018 and hopefully in mm-hmm. 2020 and every election thereafter and in the odd numbered years in the local elections that will then take place in those odd numbered Novembers, very interesting trend to me. You noted that the 59% increase in participation by voters between the primaries in 2014 and the primaries in 2018, put Doña Ana County number one in the state of New Mexico in registering new voters. But number two is Bernalillo County, that's Albuquerque and its surrounding suburbs, 48% increase. And Santa Fe County, yes, the city of Santa Fe and its surrounding hinterland, up 37%. Am I remembering correctly, would these be the three most heavily Democratic skewing counties in the state?
You know, I would question, I would assume that Taos County is pretty high up there. Actually, so the short answer is I don't know for sure. Santa Fe County, I would assume, is unquestionably one of the top three Democratic counties. I would think Taos is. Doña Ana County has a little bit higher registration of independents or declined estates than the state average, which is already pretty high. You know, it's a place that, and I think this it helps explain how Susana Martinez, our Republican governor, came out of this place. Ideologically, Doña Ana County certainly leans left. Registration is something different. And it's people, and I think this is partly that we are far from Washington and we're far from Santa Fe, and we're in a county that's often off the radar both places. People here are willing to vote for anybody if they know them and like them. They're just as likely to vote for a Republican because they're presenting something new and different than what the Democrats are proposing that in their mind might be what's always been done and hasn't been working for us.
In many ways,
so voters could swing really wide in the state and even wider in Doña Ana.
I was going to say that in many ways, New Mexico is the epitome of a purple state. We have mm-hmm. a Republican governor. We have two Democratic senators and two Democratic congressmen and one Republican congressman. And he is leaving that seat to run against a Democratic congresswoman for the governor's race. And although in most of the sort of generic tallies, there are more Democrats than there are Republicans in the state of New Mexico, and there are vast ideological differences between the liberal Democrat, Michelle Lujan Grisham, right. And the conservative Republican, Steve Pierce. But this, everybody seems to think, is going to be an awfully tight, very competitive race.
It could be. you know, people look at polls right now and say Steve Pierce is right on her heels and could catch her. They also look in Texas and say Beto O'Rourke is right on Ted Cruz's heels and could catch him. And I'd be surprised if those races are very close on Election Day. People who want Michelle Lujan Grisham to win should take Steve Pierce seriously. Absolutely, he's a good campaigner. But I've heard some people say that they suspect New Mexico is moving into a time that may be more like California, where there's less of a Republican Party presence and the biggest divide is between different wings of the Democratic Party. I don't know. We'll see what happens, right? I'm really uncertain about what any election looks like after 2016. I think we're still figuring that out.
Well, I think the wingspan of the New Mexico Democratic Party would do any eagle proud. There are some very, very conservative legislators who have been pillars of the Democratic mm-hmm. Party for decades, mm-hmm. But they vote in a manner that's much more conservative than standard Democratic. There are a few moderate Republicans in the GOP in New Mexico who, again, don't pledge strict ideological loyalty, and voters seem to like that. As you say, people split their ballots, and in a small, poor, underpopulated state, you vote with who you know.
Right. Just today, the widow of Harold Reynolds, a former congressman from New Mexico, who's a Democrat, endorsed Steve Pierce, the Republican, in the governor's race. And that's always been true of the second congressional district down here that Steve Pierce represents. Like the other two congressional districts, there are more registered Democrats than Republicans in this district. And Steve Pierce could have held that seat for as long as he wanted to, and nobody would have beaten him. People may register Democrat, but a number of them vote differently than registered Democrats in northern New Mexico would. So, our Democratic Party has a very wide wingspan in New Mexico.
Well, you know, there are a lot of congresspeople who, when they work in Washington, they move to Washington, they live in Washington, and their whole affect is very Washington. That is a charge to which Steve Pierce could plead a vigorous not guilty. His whole presentation and affect is, I'm just a kid who grew up poor in southeast New Mexico.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, one of his biggest strengths and one thing that stands out with him, and we've been talking about Southern Doñana County during this chat, Steve Pierce will go into any community, and he will sit down and talk with folks. He'll hold a public forum anywhere. He won't run away from questions. There's nobody else in our delegation who is as open to that as him. It's one of his greatest strengths, and it's one of the reasons he can't be discounted, even though his ideology may not match with New Mexico's. I know folks who live in places like Anthony in Southern Doñana County who love Steve Pierce. They are, Latino Democrats who will say, my county commissioner ignored me when I called on this issue. My state representative and state senator did. I called Steve Pierce, and we got gutters on our street or sidewalks or a park or whatever the issue was. And they don't care if he's a Republican. I've heard them say he's the only one who would listen to me. So he's good at that.
Well, the New York tabloids used to mock Senator Alphonse D'Amato of New York by calling him Senator Pothole. And that's because, like Steve Pierce, he had a fantastic network of local offices. And he, as a U.S. senator, imprinted in the minds of his constituents that his office was the go-to place if you needed help for something like there's a pothole in the street two blocks from my house and it's going to tear the wheels off my car. Constituent service has definitely enabled Steve Pierce to make a rational try for a statewide office in a state that does lean Democrat.
Yeah, and I honestly still believe that, and I think polling shows us, New Mexico is in no mood for Donald Trump and the Republican Party that, for the most part, is supporting him. And I suspect we're going to have a pretty big blue wave in November, but time will tell. It's hard to know what the electorate is going to do these days.
Yeah, and there are many, many months for them to get new data, which may influence right. their voting, change their minds. Can you say Bob right. Mueller? We're going to take a brief pause again. This is Here and There. I'm Dave Marish. Our guest is Heath Hausemann of nmpolitics.net. We're talking about getting out the vote in southern New Mexico in Doña Ana County. We'll be back right after these messages. Welcome back again to Here and There. I'm Dave Marish. Our guest is Heath Hausemann of nmpolitics.net. You've been embedded in Las Cruces in Doña Ana County for a long time, and I can see why it holds your interest, because it's so many different kinds of community, ethnically two-thirds Latino. It is the home of New Mexico State University, actually one of the world's best dryland agriculture schools, and a fine university in itself. Now, mm-hmm. you would think that both of those things, the heavy Latino tilt and that it's a university town, would make it an easy win for the Democrats, and the city has been ruled by Democrats now for almost a decade, but the county, she goes this way and that way, which makes interesting mm-hmm. interesting work for any journalist.
Yeah, it really, you know, southern New Mexico is so interesting to me, and I wish that northern New Mexico news organizations put more journalists down here. We have the border, which honestly lately, there was a moment when we learned that the Trump administration had opened this tent city in Tornillo, Texas, which is 89 miles from Las Cruces, where it felt like the region we call down here the borderlands, which is El Paso, Texas, Ciudad Juarez, Mexico, and southern New Mexico. It felt like ground zero in the Western Hemisphere, you know, for the migration from Central America north, border policies in America south, the economic factors that drive people back and forth across the border, the Trump administration's rhetoric. It was right before the Mexican presidential election, and it just felt like everything was focused in this little area for a minute. So I've always thought, as a border journalist, this is a very interesting place to be. And the state's two biggest economic development projects, the Border Industrial Park at Santa Teresa and the Spaceport, I mean, the two projects I've invested the most money in, are both within 40 miles of Las Cruces. So the most substantial efforts to wean the state government off oil and gas money are right here. And New Mexico State University, as you mentioned, is here. We have a new medical school here. It's a fascinating place. And, you know, when we're talking about voting, it's always had lower voter turnout than the other urban areas in the state, the Albuquerque metro area and Santa Fe. So what Scott Kraling is doing is very interesting to me, because I've always thought this place could stand to use some greater civic engagement. And it's hard to measure if it's working or not, right? Because voter turnout, as we discussed, has been up pretty much everywhere since Donald Trump was elected president. And that's why I dug deeper into the numbers and found that the spike in voter turnout, the increase over 2014 in Doña Ana County, was more substantial than Bernalillo County or Santa Fe County or the state as a whole. Is that evidence that the efforts the county clerk is undertaking here are working? Maybe. I mean, we need a few more elections and more data to really be able to see a trend.
Well, as Scott Kraling said, we got a lot of work to do. He's not resting on his laurels. Now, am I remembering correctly, Las Cruces is one of the original and most active sanctuary cities?
Yes. In fact, I mean, how you define sanctuary is an interesting question, but the city council has come out and passed various policies about it hasn't been as aggressive in his language as Santa Fe. Las Cruces has been more careful about that, but essentially they don't talk to ICE, you know, all those types of things. There are two immigrants who ICE has actively looked for who are being sheltered in a Catholic church facility in Las Cruces, and the Catholic Church as a whole nationally does not encourage that type of activity, and it's my understanding that when the first of those two immigrants was given shelter in this Catholic facility, it was the first time the Catholic Church in America had done that since Trump was elected for any immigrant. So That started in Las Cruces. I think this is a city that we've seen push back pretty strongly against the border and immigration policies of this administration.
Well, I think one of the things that really interested me after I moved to New Mexico is the very active political role, not partisan role, but again, mm-hmm. get out the vote and participate and make your presence felt of the Catholic Church mm-hmm. on just about every issue except abortion, where for obvious yeah. religious reasons they are extremely pro-life, but on mm-hmm. every other aspect of the social gospel. The Catholic Church in the state of New Mexico is one of the biggest forces for progressive voting and liberalism in the state.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it was a very hesitant and hard shift to actually say, yes, we are going to allow this immigrant to come into our facility and take on that responsibility and that risk. You know, it's one thing to spend money lobbying. It's another entirely to house someone that the federal government's law enforcement might come and try to take from you. But they did it. They did it in southern New Mexico. And I don't actually know if they're doing it anywhere else. They may be, but I know this was the first place it happened. So that's an interesting little tidbit about the Catholic Church in southern New Mexico.
When President Trump made his threat that he was ready to shut down the federal government again mm-hmm. unless Congress, and of course he says the Democrats, but there are a lot of resistors in the Republican Party, so unless sure. Congress votes his border wall, he's ready to shut down the government. How's mm-hmm. that playing in southern New Mexico, which is, of course, on the border?
Yeah, it's not. Not even Steve Pierce wants the border wall. And I think we've seen this time and again as immigration has become a topic in Washington. And the last real serious efforts at immigration reform in 2005-07, you had all the border state governors essentially agreeing with each other in spite of political party and their senators and the president at the time, who was George W. Bush, a former Texas governor. When you talk to Steve Pierce, he'll say, we absolutely need more border security. He'll use language like we need to seal the border. But he says a wall is a complete waste of money that won't work. We need agents. We need better technology, which are things that, in general, a lot of Democrats also get on board with. But he said the wall is just stupid. It won't work, and it's a huge waste of money.
Well,
that's southern New Mexico in general. It's pretty widespread thought about the wall here.
It's another aspect of my, I'm sure by now, annoying mantra of look at the map. Border communities are full of families that yeah. straddle the border. Yep. Uncle Joe is not Mexican, he's Uncle Joe. And mm-hmm. so the idea of such a forcible separation, not to mention the economic consequences of the whole NAFTA negotiation and the idea of a border wall on this mammoth Santa Teresa project, mm-hmm. to me, the border wall and the mentality that comes with it has got to be an awfully hard sell in the borderlands.
Yeah. We have so many families in Las Cruces and El Paso and the communities in between where you may have children who are American citizens, some older children who have DACA, parents who are undocumented, cousins, whatever, people who are able to travel back and forth across the border, who will regularly go back to Mexico and visit family, or their Mexican family will come up here and visit them. So the border is very fluid for folks like that. There's a neighborhood in Sunland Park right on the border, an opera, that was literally cut in half by what today is a wall that was built during the Obama administration and then is being extended by the Trump administration. And there's not a border crossing in Sunland Park, so if people want to go visit old friends or family who live literally what used to be across the street, they now have to travel 5 miles east or west to border crossings and then 5 miles back, and there's a big wall between them. And some of the old families here we'll talk about before we dammed the river, the Rio Grande, that it would shift flows, right, depending on the year and the amount of water in the river. And there were homes that would be in the United States one year and Mexico the next, depending on whether the river shifted or not. So there are still families here that remember the time when the border was like that.
Well,
so it's a very fluid place.
My wife spent some time in Big Bend National Park, beautiful place in West Texas that, of course, is bordered by the Rio Grande. And a regular part of a visit to Big Bend was to take a canoe and paddle across to the Mexican side and walk up to the village, which is, you know, 100 meters away, say, from the border, and have a home-cooked Mexican meal and buy a couple of tchotchkes and then get in your canoe and paddle back across. And that's not so easy anymore.
No.
Which could hurt Big Bend, but certainly hurts the feelings of people on both sides of the border. Heath Hauserman of nmpolitics.net. Do check it out. You'll find so much of interest in it. Heath, thanks so much for joining us on Here and There.
Dave, I'm happy to do it. Thanks for having me on.
That's our story for today. I'm Dave Marish. Research and production assistance for Here and There by Amy Marish, Ann Silberman, and Mary Lou Cooper. Operational control by Sean Conlon. Our theme is by Kate Powell. Here and There is a production of KSFR-FM 101.1 in Santa Fe, New Mexico. You can find program notes and listen to podcasts on our website, davemarish.com. Subscribe to Here and There on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, or listen online at ksfr.org. Follow us on Twitter at Dave Marish, KSFR, and on Facebook at Here and There with Dave Marish. Join us again when next we go Here and There in search of news. Here and There is funded in part by the Reva and David Logan Foundation, keeping watch for the strategies that help create a more informed and just future for all.